Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, November 4th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Hello? Hello, yes, that's right. Yes. Yes, Jeanette is 22. She has a full but firm 36-24-36 figure and offers a full personal service. You will like her.
I see we're getting in the mood. So, boys and girls, guess what? She's back! The master, or mistress if you please, of all things polyamory. The delightful and oh-so-wise Cunning Minx is here again to finish the conversation we began at this time last week. And gauging from the comments I've received about last week's podcast, you've been chomping at the bit, as have I, for her speedy return and more of her exceptional sex education.
Jeanette has devastating revealing photos, caters for party lovers, and offers a full theatrical wardrobe. French maid, nurse, gym slip, that kind of thing.
I'm trying to work here. But wait, did you somehow miss part one of this insightful lesson on polyamory? Well, not to worry, buckaroos. Last week's podcast, like all my podcasts, is archived right there on drdicksexadvice.com. All you gotta do is use my site's search function in the sidebar. Type in podcast number 163, and voila! But don't forget to include the pound sign when you do your search.
Mild CP and other games. Executive fun for the over 40s. Kinky, but not cruel. Why not pop round?
You know you're going to get me in trouble. The police are going to be at the door any minute. Listen, be sure to visit Minx and all her poly friends on her outstanding website, polyweekly.com. Today's podcast sponsor is Eden Fantasies. Listen up, you guys. EdenFantasies.com provides you a unique opportunity to both shop and educate yourself about the amazing array of adult products out there. Of course, they uphold a high standard of quality in the toys they carry, but they are even more focused on customer service and consumer education, which makes Eden Fantasies, to my mind, the very best place to shop on the net. I also want to turn your attention to Eden Fantasy's brilliant new e-magazine called Sex Is. You'll find tantalizing articles and informed opinions on sex, society, health, erotica, and humor. You will even find ways to green your sex life. And just in case you don't get a big enough dose of Dr. Dick here at drdicksexadvice.com, you'll find that I have a weekly column at Sex Is, too. It's called Dr. Dick on Demand. Look for the Sex Is banner in the sidebar of my site. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Minx, and thank you again for spending more time with us because, as I said last week, we were just getting to the meat of things. And I'd like to pick up exactly where we left off, and that is we were discussing polyamory and what it is and what it isn't and how relationships form and all that kind of stuff. One of the questions that I have is, how is polyamory different from, say, multiple marriage or polygamy?
That's a really common question. And I think the basic difference in the way that polygamy has traditionally been practiced in the United States mm-hmm. is that polygamy is traditionally practiced with one man and multiple wives, which is technically polygyny.
Right, right, exactly.
G-Y-N-Y.
Yes.
Polygamy technically means having more than one spouse, mm-hmm. Which would mean that the women could have multiple spouses as well. That is almost never how it's practiced.
Polyandry.
Polyandry is a woman having multiple husbands.
Right, yes.
Polygyny is a man having multiple wives,
right.
Which is what we usually associate with polygamy, which is technically a person with multiple spouses.
Right.
So, and that's the issue that we run against. Polygamy, frankly, kind of gives me the willies, because it is steeped in religion. In particular, right. It has these Mormon undertones, even though the Mormon Church outlawed polygamy in 1890, I think. It's also very patriarchal the way it's right. practiced. It is always one man with many wives, and there's these, you know, financial support, and the wives are not allowed to have other male partners. Yes. Sometimes I believe they're allowed to have lesbian experiences with each other, which I find even more patriarchal. That yeah. If it's just the women together, then that's okay. But if we bring another penis in, that would be bad.
Yeah.
So I actually have an issue with that, just because of the fairness mm-hmm. aspect of it. Polyamory is, of course, dealing with long-term, loving, committed, multiple relationships. So, first of all, it doesn't have to involve marriage at all if you don't want it to. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like marriage. A lot of people like saying vows. They like having legal documents. And they like the public acknowledgement that it is. A lot of people just feel more stable in a marriage.
Yeah.
But the great thing about poly is that you have a choice of what your relationship's going to be. It's like you take the Legos and you get to build your own relationship.
Right.
So you get to decide who your partners are, how many, and what your relationship with each one of them is going to be. And that's, I think, the biggest difference from polygamy, which is strictly marriage, tends to be very patriarchal and tends to be one man marrying a lot of wives.
Yes.
And even if the wives get along really, really great, which has certainly been the case in the past, I have a problem with the lack of sexual freedom for right. the women in it. And that's where I think polyamory really shines, is that you can express yourself emotionally and sexually in ways that work for you. And if anybody in your family has a problem with that, well, then you can just sit down and talk about it. And,
right.
you know, it's not uncommon in poly families for somebody to want a partner that everybody else maybe doesn't get along with, or somebody wants more or less sexual freedom, more or less fluid bonding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you sit down and talk about it, and everybody gets a say. It's not the one guy at the head of the family who says, and I shall be the only penis.
From now on. Poly is also very different from swinging, which is, you know, another really popular sexual recreation. And can you tell us why it is so?
You know, those lines are really very blurry. It's
mm-hmm.
it's always a little tricky to explain how poly and swinging are different, because they're the Venn diagrams that are overlapping in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
Swinging is definitely another way to practice non-monogamy,
mm-hmm.
like polyamory is a way to be
right.
to practice non-monogamy. The differences tend to be, and I say tend to because it's not 100%, so please don't write me in and say, no, I went to the swing club where it's like this. I know that it's that way sometimes. Tend to be. Swinging tends to be more couple-oriented, and it
mm-hmm.
tends to be more event-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So with swinging, it's more likely that an established couple will go out to an event and, you know, have some type of fun sexual stuff with a person or another couple or a group or what have you. And then they will come back, and they will still be that couple.
Right.
And so with polyamory, well, all rules, all bets are off. The polyamory, the focus tends to be more on the relationship. So you might have a couple. You might have a triad. You might have a quad. You might have a single person who's kind of multi-dating.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a couple of secondaries. You might have a couple of primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's less likely that they would go out, do something sexual with partners, come back, and then not really see those partners
right.
again, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So
now,
it is
all
relationship
that being,
and gearing toward, you know, like time involved with one another, as opposed to recreational sex, which is, of course, there's nothing wrong with recreational sex.
Right. However, of course, I have to put a little asterisk mm-hmm. in saying that being said, there are plenty of swingers who have couples and partners that they see at the club
right.
on a regular basis.
Right.
And there are
so
plenty
sure.
of poly people who do go out and just have kinky, sexy fun and enjoy it and then come back home.
You people have all the fun. That's why we need to put it down right away.
We can have a lot of fun. It's true. We can also have a lot of drama. I would say that's the downside to poly,
right, right, right.
though, is when you're juggling more than one relationship. I mean, one relationship, you guys know how much you fight with your wives already, right? Okay, so now imagine that you have... So now imagine that you have two women that are pissed at you because you didn't do the dishes like you said you would. And one of their boyfriends is pissed at you because he doesn't get to hang out with her this weekend because you didn't do the dishes like you said you would. And you have to resolve this problem. And now your boyfriend is pissed at you because...
It goes on and on. So one of the things that I think I'm aware of, and I wanted to run this by you, is that swinging is a predominantly heterosexual phenomenon, and poly doesn't seem to have that kind of stigma. It's much more inclusive. I mean, I know gay people who identify themselves as poly, but they would never identify themselves as swingers.
Right. And traditionally, swinging tends to be rather... homophobic in terms of men.
Tell me.
Right. It's not uncommon for women who are swingers. It's practically mandated that you must be bisexual.
Right.
You must be into other women. However, it's not a friendly environment for men who want to be with other men.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me very, very sad because I think two guys making out and fucking is really, really hot. So
and for the women, they like that.
We do, and I could see two guys. I mean, I could see two girls making out any time. I mean, I have tons of friends. I could just, you know,
could you make out for me, please?
That's not, you know, it's like, sure, yeah, that's not so much of an issue. What's going to turn me on is seeing two guys together, and I'm probably not going to find that in a swing club myself. Mm-hmm. So it is very funny. I will go to the, I've been to a club only once or twice just because I wanted to see what it was
right.
like. And it's true, the women are very open, and they're very open to being with other women.
Right.
And if the men touch each other, they're like, oh, sorry, man. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm like, really?
Oh, my
really?
God, my hand touched your balls. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. So there's that. Again, that being said, there are some clubs that are a little more open yeah. to that. So, you know, it might be changing a little bit. Yeah. And with poly, I think there's more an acceptance that because if you've accepted this alternative lifestyle, because poly can be very socially challenging in that it challenges the social norm. With swingers, people basically stay in couples and then
right.
they have external stuff. They have extra pair couplings, as
right.
the biologist would say.
Yeah.
With polyamory, again, all bets are off. So it's threatening to society because we don't have a couple of the base. We may have a person, we may have two people, we may have three or four. The base may be changing. The base may be there, you know, four people 1 year, and it could be a different two people the next year and three people the next year.
Right.
And that's really threatening to society because we don't really know what to make of it. We're used to thinking of people in dyads.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too. Right, right. And, well, we like permanency, but that doesn't mean we're going to get it, even if you're monogamous. All the divorced people out there are saying, yeah, I know, thanks. Yeah. And so I think that type of sort of participating in this alternative relationship structure can make poly people a little bit more open to the idea of somebody identifying their sexuality in a way that's not completely traditional. And I'm not talking about just like GLBT. There are a lot of things that are on the GLBT Kinsey scale that don't necessarily fit into one particular category. And I think there can be a little bit more of a tolerance to that just because we're all crazy, wacky poly people anyway.
Right,
so,
right.
you know, we don't really care if you identify as male or female or, you know, gay, straight, you're gay today, you're bi tomorrow, you're genderqueer. We don't really mind as long as you're honest with us.
Yes, right. So here's a thing that I've been trying to wrap my head around for a very long time. Monogamy, at least as we understand it today, is a relative newcomer to the way human relationships develop. And yet it is now the norm. Do you know why that is? And can you speculate about, you know... why that power is?
Well, what's interesting is not that monogamy is new or that monogamy is the norm. It's that social monogamy, as the
right.
anthropologists call it, is the norm, which is we as human beings are social creatures, and we do tend to form pair bonds. So we just naturally, biologically look for one other person to be with. That's not unusual at all. That is part of our biological makeup. What we have come to be and what is shown sort of biologically as a culture is that we form social monogamous bonds, which means that we have a partner and then we have these extra pair couplings.
Mm-hmm.
So we are all, both men and women, drawn to have couplings outside of that pair, but we need the pair bond for various biological reasons, including things like child rearing,
right.
Safety, mate protection. I'm speaking
right.
biologically.
Right,
this is
right,
all
right.
from The Myth of Monogamy,
right.
Which is one of my favorite books. If you've ever wondered about this question that Dr. Dick is asking, go read The Myth of Monogamy and your eyes will be opened, because this is just how we are biologically. And somewhere along the way, and I've read some books and I'm still not quite sure of the answer to this, but somewhere along the way that social monogamy became enforced as the norm. And even acknowledging that we had extra pair couplings, the social part of it was acknowledged to be a bad thing. Mm. And I don't know why. I'm not really quite sure why. I just don't understand why people can't just let people be the way that they are and be honest about it and have fun with it.
Right. Well, there's so much mythology about, you know, like, and we compare ourselves to other biological creatures or species, you know. We don't mate for life. Humans don't. There are affectional choices that we make in our lives. Some of them include sexual expression. Some of them don't. And I think we would be much healthier people if that mythology would break down some. And that's why I'm so pleased that, you know, pioneers, poly pioneers, are, you know, helping us do precisely that.
Yeah, it always amuses me when people ask, okay, so are we naturally monogamous or not?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, if you have to ask the question, then you're not. Because if we were biologically monogamous, as in for life, one partner,
right.
you wouldn't ask the question. You would just do it. You
yeah.
wouldn't be sitting around asking, do I want to cheat or not? You'd,
yeah.
you
that wouldn't
even
be
asking the question.
Exactly.
So it wouldn't be a question at all. So no, we're not naturally monogamous. We're socially monogamous, and we don't mate for life. Very few species do. Very
mm-hmm.
few species are monogamous,
mm-hmm.
And very few species mate for life. And I fear the life
which
of
is
me
a good thing, because
that,
you know, they would die out a whole lot quicker.
Well, I don't understand why that is held up as an ideal.
Really?
Because that's what the question is really asking, is why can't we be monogamous for life? And my question is, what is the value in being monogamous for life?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you ask that?
Mm-hmm. And when relationships, you know, come apart, as they are likely to do, then it's somehow a failure on the part of one or the other, you know, when it doesn't necessarily have to be so at all. I mean, who said that the only way that we can be in love is, you know, forever, death do us part kind of stuff?
Right, and I struggled for a long time with the idea of a relationship being a failure because it ended.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because I still talk to the people that I've dated and loved in my life.
Right.
In various ways. I still, you know, I still participate in their lives in a different level, but
mm-hmm.
I still am there participating in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fond of saying one of my exes, Steve, who does the Escape Pod podcast, that he is the best ex-boyfriend ever, because we get along far better as
uh-huh.
ex-boyfriend and girlfriend than we ever did as
right.
boyfriend and girlfriend,
yeah.
because of just the emotional stuff we put on each other when we tried to be in that relationship. But when but if we decided not to be boyfriend and girlfriend because we couldn't be monogamous for life, or we couldn't be whatever it was that we wanted to be, I mean, he was married, so obviously monogamy was not a question,
mm-hmm.
but we would have missed out on the chance for this fantastic relationship that's somewhere between friendship and cuddle bunnies and mess around sometimes when we're in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a fabulous relationship. It's just not boyfriend-girlfriend relationship.
Right. And interestingly enough, I mean, we have a whole lot more latitude in terms of other outlets in the human experience. Like today, I'll be, you know, I'll study to be a priest, and then many years later, I won't be anymore. And my career as, you know, an artist will, you know, transform it from a graphic artist to an author, or, you know, we make these transitions in our life, you know, frequently and often, and, you know, with greater ease than we are able to do in terms of how relationships, you know, come together and fall apart.
Yeah, I agree. And That's true. We can be Generation X for poly.
Have you seen the attitudes toward polyamory changing over the years? Is it developing?
I would say yes. In the last year, I gave the keynote at Poly Living in Philadelphia, and I was really terrified, frankly, because I mean, I'm a public speaker for a living. I had been for many years, and I'd never given a keynote, and I thought I have to come up with this, you know, sweeping, inspiring story, and I don't know what to say, and like I need to be inspirational or something, and so I started looking at my own experience, especially with the podcast, and what I decided to focus on was the attitudes toward poly, because I felt that those had changed. Because when I was first doing the podcast, I would get calls from reporters saying, you know, oh my God, you live this, you know, crazy, wacky life. And the articles were, oh my God, some people are this crazy, wacky poly thing. Isn't that weird? They might be living next to you. Ah. And nowadays, there aren't stories like that because it's old news. Mm-hmm. Because there is at least some level of acknowledgement in society that people have these alternative lifestyles. I don't think they understand it or know it very well. I don't think people really know what poly is. They don't have the image in their mind. Like when I say swinger, you get this image of polyester swinging medallions. You know.
I know I do.
When I say polygamy, you have this image of Mormon cults with, mm-hmm. you know, lots of wives in prairie dresses. When I say polyamory, I don't know what comes up. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is still lacking. But I will say the coverage has really changed. When I look at the way the media is covering poly now, the articles tend to be more focused on, hey, this is interesting. Hey, this is how some people are addressing the high divorce rate. Hey, this seems to be working for them. Isn't this fascinating? What do you think? And it's a little bit more fair and unbiased, a little bit more curious, mm-hmm. as opposed to sensational.
Yeah. But, you know, the sensational aspect of it, I mean, if they want to go there, if it's ratings week, you know for certain that they're going to take a slant on it that is going to be a little bit of a dish rather than, you know, isn't this a curiosity? I mean, I used to, you know, when I was in the bosom of the church and I was the gay priest kind of thing, although, God, what a silly thing to say. I mean, mm-hmm. and I would be called, you know, by the media, to go on a television show or something like that when it was ratings week because they wanted something salacious and, you know, outstanding and weird and, you know, frighten the horses kind of stuff. So it's a weird thing, that media business.
Yeah, I mean, I would not go on the Tyra Banks show or anything. but fortunately, the mainstream coverage has been getting a little bit better, I think. The Newsweek article that Teresa and Matt and Larry got was really outstanding mm-hmm. and really very fair.
Yeah.
So I think, not to say that we won't still be called to do, you know, what is it, Jerry Springer? Is he still on the air? But I'm not sure how many of us would actually agree to do that show.
Right. So polyamorous folks seem to be more highly evolved in terms of aspects of human sexual expression. And a lot of poly folks that I know, isn't that a nice way of putting it? You're sluts. Yep. You're all sluts, I'm telling you.
Yes, we're all smarter than you. Right. Because there are no stupid, neurotic, polyamorous people.
I don't think so either. But anyhow, I do notice that if you're poly, you seem to be able to, you know, involve other kinds of sexual expressions, kink and BDSM and power play. And is there a casual or causal connection at all?
Well, I actually do disagree with your original
okay,
statement
good, good.
That,
right.
that poly people are more highly
I'm
evolved
going to cry
in terms
now,
of anything.
But go ahead.
You know, poly people are just people. Some of us have enough experience that we can avoid drama and bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And our experience has led us in different places. But I'm very fond of saying it, you know, poly people are really just as neurotic and fucked up and silly and make bad choices and forget to make the bed like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is that because in poly relationships, you can't really let things slide. And when poly blows up in your face, it's magnified much more than when monogamy blows up in your face. Mm-hmm. You've got more people angry at you. It causes more problems. It's just a much bigger mess. Mm-hmm. So there's incentive for learning the communication skills that you need in order to not have that happen. So the only thing I will say is that with monogamous relationships, a lot of things can go unsaid. A lot of things you can just sort of sweep under the rug and not talk about. And they may not come up for 10 or 20 years. You cannot get away with that in poly, because with multiple partners and multiple personalities, each one affecting all the relationship dynamics in a very subtle or strong way on a daily basis, you can't get away with shit. Mm-hmm. You have to address everything, every tiny thing, every scheduling issue, every bit of chores, issues relating to kink and DS, who's going to be collared, who's not, what are you going to do with her, how's that going to make me feel? You have to drag all that out in the open. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say it makes anyone more evolved. But I will say that increasing that particular skill set of learning to be comfortable talking with your partners about things that you're generally not comfortable talking about.
Right.
And doing it anyway. That is a very useful and powerful skill set.
So the common thread throughout our discussion this week and last was this issue of communication, how communication will be what will make a poly relationship or a sexually exclusive relationship work. And so it seems to me that you have a whole lot more opportunities to practice communication skills in a poly relationship than one would in a monogamous relationship.
I would say in general.
Yeah.
Again, little asterisk, but in general,
right.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's just you're going to be called on to communicate in ways that are challenging and uncomfortable more often in a poly relationship than in your average monogamous one.
Is it difficult these days to come out as poly?
It depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the person and on the community.
Mm-hmm.
It can be challenging because people don't really know what poly is.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do a lot of education before you can even come out as poly, so they'll know what you're talking about.
If some guy said he's poly, you know, somebody might think, are you cross-dressing or poly? Is that...
Or you just can't keep it in your pants. you just want to have a lot of sex, and
right.
what stupid, idiotic woman is going to go along with this? Well, yeah. I can't tell you, she's off with a girlfriend right now. That response is not uncommon, but coming out as poly, the bits of advice that I do give on that are that you have to be prepared to be insanely patient,
mm-hmm.
because depending upon who your family or friends or whatever are, you're going to have to be prepared to deal with their negative, hateful, whatever reactions that probably have nothing to do with you and have to do with them. If you come out to somebody who has been cheated on in a marriage, they are probably never going to accept you.
Right.
I'll tell you that right now. If you're coming out especially to a parent who's an older generation and who had to deal with cheating in an age when monogamy was the only option,
yes.
and was hurt by that and felt like she or he had no choice but to live with that pain every day, that person is probably never going to accept your poly because it's associated with too much of their own personal pain. And that's
right.
not your fault. It's just mm-hmm. the person had the experience that she had, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the other bit of advice for coming out is you need to feel them out first. Please don't dump it on your entire family at Thanksgiving
right.
dinner. That's just rude. One of the things that Michelle Bellanger writes about and she suggests for feeling people out, for coming out, is asking them in a theoretical way, do you think there's just one person for you in life?
Ah, interesting. What a great way to begin this conversation.
Exactly, because then a lot of people have thought about, well, I think there's just one person, but, what if my husband dies and I'm only 50 and I
right.
want more, or I'm only 40 or 30?
Yeah.
And also things like, do you think that you can love just one person? Or,
mm-hmm.
If it hadn't been dad, or if it hadn't been mom, if you hadn't met so-and-so,
right.
where do you think you would be right now? Just in a theoretical way. And mm-hmm. have some conversations like that to feel them out, to see how open they are to at least the theoretical idea of, gee, maybe something besides monogamy might work.
Right. Is it difficult to maintain a healthy sense of self with multiple partners?
I think it is difficult to maintain a healthy sense of self if you don't have a healthy sense of self. I think it's difficult to maintain multiple partners
uh-huh.
if you don't feel good about yourself.
That's so
yeah.
true.
Yeah, if you're going to be poly, you really have to deal with your insecurities. You have
mm-hmm.
to I'm not saying you can't have any. I'm saying you really need to be aware and be
right.
willing to deal with them.
Yeah.
I've got my insecurities. I know what they are. I recognize when they're coming up. And I'll give people warning. I'll
mm-hmm.
tell them beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go around being an insecure person and being poly because it will make you psycho. You
mm-hmm.
will be the crazy. You'll be the crazy asshole. You'll be the crazy bitch. It's just going to happen.
In the little time that we have left, I'd like to turn our attention to an area of special interest to me as a therapist. And I often hear from kinksters and pervs, as well as your run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk, that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals. Is that your experience as well?
No.
When
I was looking for a therapist, I know that there's a... It's actually called the Kink Aware Professionals List, but it's also
yes.
poly.
Yes.
And I went there and...
So you knew to go there.
I knew to go there, yes.
Oh, good for you.
Exactly. And I also had enough friends that were either in therapy. If you want to find a good poly-friendly therapist, you just go to your local GLBT center because the gay-friendly therapists are probably
uh-huh.
going to be poly-friendly.
Uh-huh.
And I also know that in order to find one, you need to interview them first. You need to tell them about your situation,
right.
feel them out.
Right.
And I also know that when I had a gynecologist, when I went to her and said, and just so you know, I've become poly. I have two boyfriends. What do you need to tell me? What do I need to know in terms of STD protection, my sexual health? And she looked at me and said, well, you just need to limit the number of partners that you have. And I said, okay, I need to find another gynecologist. Because...
Yes, just because you have a relationship
right.
with a professional doesn't mean that it's got to last you the rest of your life. If they're not serving you, move on.
Exactly. And I would really encourage people to... You really have to be open and honest with your therapist and your gynecologist. And you have to bring up the subject. You need to be brave enough to go out
That's
there and
right.
say, okay, I've added another partner. This is his sexual history. You know, this is my physical history.
Mm-hmm.
These are the types of protections we're using. How much risk am I at? Okay, we're looking at adding another partner. It's going to be sometimes here's the history, what you recommend. And you have to be fearless in bringing those things up.
Right.
This is you and your health.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
don't fuck with it. Just be brave. And if your healthcare provider makes you feel uncomfortable, find another fucking provider.
Right, exactly that. I mean, because the problem is does not reside with you necessarily. It resides with their limited life experience and their judgment about how other people live their lives. So good, good, good. Before we go, could you give us places where we can go to look for reading materials on this topic?
Absolutely. My favorite site is the site that Tacit runs called What Like Two Girlfriends.
Mm.
And it's the first site I send people to for polyamory. But if you're first starting with poly, he has a collection of insanely intelligent essays on
wow.
everything from common poly mistakes, how to be a secondary, how to date a couple, what does poly mean, here's a poly dictionary. It is a fantastic place to start. I also really highly recommend Tristan Taramino's book called Opening Up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is just one of the best books on poly out there right now. So if you read Opening Up, which is more of it's a research study on the different ways that people have chosen to be non-monogamous. And there are checklists, like if you like this, then you'll probably want this relationship model.
Mm.
Here's a relationship model, here's a case study. If you, you won't like this if you are jealous or this or that or the other.
Right.
And you can go through the book and find what works best for you. And if you combine that with the poly classic, The Ethical Slut, which talks more about the idea of loving more and the idea of just being generally sexually and emotionally open, those are a great pairing.
Right. Outstanding.
Don't forget the Polyamory in the News.
Right.
If
and
you
your site, too, which
and
is?
My site, of course, which is polyweekly.com.
And because you have a reading list there as well?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Good, good, good. So, darling, this has been outstanding.
Yes, honey.
So much of your precious time. I really appreciate it. We are all the richer for the experience, and in the time between now and when we speak again, we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Awesome. I'll be looking for all you perverts.
Good. And we should say, Dr. Dick said hello when we visit.
Yes, please. If you write or call me or listen to my podcast and love it or hate it, please write me and say, you know what, Dr. Dick said this would be good, and it sucks ass. What the fuck?
Get me out of here. All right, darling. Take care. Be well. And we'll be chatting again soon.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Dick.
Bye. What a marvelous show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is EdenFantasies.com, the one-stop place to shop for quality adult toys, fetish kits, and sexy lingerie. But wait, that's not all. Eden Fantasies has developed an online community of product reviewers, fantasy contributors, and renowned sexperts who will make your online shopping experience a joy.
First thing Monday morning, everyone here, get your knickers into gear.
My knickers are always in gear. Listen, one thing you won't want to miss is the Eden Fantasies community blog. It's called EdenCafe.com. It's so fun and sexy, irreverent and cheeky, much like this show, but it's also exceptionally informative. Look for the Eden Fantasies banner right in the sidebar of my site, DrDickSexAdvice.com, and you can link to the brilliant Eden Cafe from there. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously, under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Leave a comment when you do.
What do you think I am?
I think we've established that. Listen, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.